There's a medrash in last week's Sedra that says the following. Rishoyim miskaimim al Eloheihem. Rishoyim stand on their God. As it says, the Hine Omeid al Hayor. Paro had a dream, and in his dream he was standing on the waters of the Nile. And the Nile was one of the gods of the Egyptians. So the Rasha stands on his God. Tzadikim Eloheihem miskayim aleihem. But tzadikim, God, stands on us. As it says, by Yaakov, v'hine Hashem nitzav alav. Yaakov Avinu saw the ladder, the angels going up and down, and then he saw God standing over him. So tzadikim, God, stands on them, and rishayim stand on their God. What does that mean? Basically, I think there are two issues here, two concepts that this medrash brings out. The difference between the Rasha and the Tzaddik. The first, the Shurei Das mentions, and that is that Tzaddik always has godliness and God above him. He's always striving for more and more and more. Whereas the Rasha sets himself up with whatever wherewithal his God gave him, and that's it. He stands on those powers, and that's it. He's not interested in going higher and higher, just the opposite. He's interested in remaining where he is, standing on the powers that he's given and finished. It's one idea. Second idea is that the Rasha uses his God to give himself a standing. Rishoyim create gods to give them importance, to give them, they create their gods in their image. The Greeks were like that. The Greeks created gods that basically were supermen and superwomen who had all the foibles of human beings except in a super way. And that gave them the justification to lead the same kind of lives like they attributed to their gods. Lives of theft and adultery and all the weaknesses of human beings they gave to their gods. And that's Greek mythology, right? Each one killing the other and stealing from the other and a host of other terrible things that these gods did to each other. And that means that if my gods can do it, I can do it too. So they created God in their own image, in the image they would like to be, and that's their gods gave them existence and gave them a standing. It was all very selfish. Now, Shein Kein, we believe that God created us in his image. And we are here to bring God's presence into the world. So God, kibiyachol, exists on us. The tzaddik exists for not selfish but selfless reasons of bringing God's presence into the world. That's a second idea. Now these two ideas represent two basic concepts of Yiddishkeit, which are the foundation of what we are. The second idea, the idea of the tzaddik being selfless. His entire existence is to bring God's presence into the world. That's what it says by the Avos. The Avos were Merkava L'Shechina. They were like a chariot that brought God's presence into the world. That was their whole purpose. Their whole purpose was to be a vehicle to bring God's presence into the world. They had no other interest. They had nothing else. They weren't looking to make themselves great. They were looking to make the Ribbono Shel'Olam great. And in fact, in this coming week's Sedra, Yosef tells his brothers, when he reveals himself to them, he tells them, go tell my father, Somani Elohim Adon Lechol Eretz Mitzrayim. So the simple meaning is, God made me a ruler over the entire Egypt. But there's another way of reading those words. One of the Chassidish Rebbe says this. Somani Elohim, I made God Adon L'chol Mitzrayim, a master over the whole Mitzrayim. That was the purpose of my reign in Mitzrayim, was to make God the ruler. Because everybody's talking about God, and I attributed my ability to interpret the dreams to God, and I attributed the advice I gave to Paro to God, and I attributed the famine and the plenty to God, and now in Egypt everybody's talking about God. So I made God the master in Egypt. So that was the entire interest of the Avos. It wasn't self-interest. It was totally selfless. And also, the second concept is, once you have, that's called tahara, purity. Purity means that you do things, l'shem shamayim, you do them totally altruistically, and not for your own selfish reasons. That's called tahara. Tahara leads to kedusha. Kedusha is where you elevate yourself and try to sublimate every single physical thing in this world and reach higher, reach up towards godliness from this physical world. That's kedusha. Kedusha is taking everything and sanctifying it and making it holy. But it starts with tahara. First, you have to have selfless, altruistic, pure motives. And then you can reach kedusha and take everything and sanctify it and make it holy and bring it up towards God. So that's the tzaddik. The tzaddik, God rests on him. His entire motivation, his entire purpose in life is to bring God's presence into the world. And because of that, he's constantly striving higher and higher to bring up the material lower world up to godliness. The Rosh is just the opposite. His God is there for selfish reasons, to give him a standing, to give him importance, so he can use it for a very, very selfish motivation. And the male, he's not looking to raise anything up to holiness. He's interested in just basing himself and bringing himself down into the physical gashmiistika world. Now, these two concepts, tahara and kedusha, are the foundation of what the Jewish people are. We are, as a nation, tzaddikim. So what it says in the Medrash that applies to the tzaddik applies to us as a nation. The Amei Chulam Tzaddikim. Klal Yisrael as a nation are called tzaddikim. In fact, we are called a tzaddik insofar that tzaddik katamar yifrach. The tzaddik is like a date palm. On the date palm, there are all different kinds of things. There's thorns, there's fruit, there's leaves. In Klal Yisrael, there are all different kinds of people, even thorns. But as long as they are part of the tree, they all are called tzaddik. So Klal Yisrael is a klal. Whoever still has a connection to the Jewish people, hasn't cut himself away from us completely, so he is included in that general title of tzaddik. So we are tzaddikim. So therefore we represent those two concepts, tahara and kedusha, and that is exactly what it says our mission in this world is. The atem tiyuli mamleches kohanim the goy kadosh. We are a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. Now what does it mean to be a kingdom of priests? A kohen is a servant, one who serves, a meshores. A kohen has no personal motivation, selfish motivation. He's totally bato, says the Maral, to the Rabbanu Shalom. He's oved. Avoda means service. It means total subjugation, total negation to the Rabbanu Shalom. That's what an oved is. That's what avoda is. And that's what a kohen is. So, mamleches kohanim, our entire empire, our kingdom is God's kingdom. We're not looking to make ourselves great. We are looking to bring God's kingdom into the world, and that's our kingdom. And we are merely kohanim. We are merely servants of the Rabbanu Shalom. That represents tahara, purity. purity of motive. And we are then, mamela, goy kadosh. From that purity comes holiness. We're a nation, a holy nation, that sanctifies every single thing in life and makes it holy. We don't do things mundane, we do things in a holy way. The way we eat, the way we sleep, the way we conduct our married life, our social life, our economic life. All is raised up and sublimated and made kodesh. That is what the Jewish people are. And that's exactly what the Yevonim wanted to destroy. They didn't want to destroy us necessarily. They didn't want to destroy our Beis HaMikdash. What they wanted to do was the antithesis of Tahara and Kedusha. What's the opposite of Tahara? Tumah. What's the opposite of Kedusha? Chilul. Chulin. By the Yevonim, we find those two verbs, letamei ulechalel, to make us tamei, to make us like everybody else, where our motives in this world would be hedonistic, would be for our own purposes, not pure, not for the sake of the Rabbanu Shel Olam, but for the sake of our own passions. That's what the Yevonim represented, total tumah. They lived a life of total hedonism. Everything was for themselves, selfish, their own pleasure. And mamela, they were chulin. There was no holiness. It was all desecration. It was all secular. That's what the Yevonim were, secularists. And that's what they made impression on Jews, to become secularists. And that's why they targeted five things that they felt would take away the yichud, the specialness of the Jewish. We were special because we are mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh. That's what makes us special. We are a purely motivated people whose entire existence is to serve God and to bring His presence into this world. And therefore we sanctify everything in the world and make it holy and make it godly. And they wanted to take that specialness away from us and make us like everybody else, make us like them. And therefore, it was a struggle between Malchus and Malchus. What's the Malchus over here? Kishaam the Malchus Yavan Harishah, it's their kind of kingdom, their kind of royalty, or it's our kind of kingdom. Is it a kingdom that represents God's kingdom, or a kingdom that stands opposite and against God's kingdom? Which one is going to win? And therefore, in order to achieve what they wanted to achieve, to take away our relationship with God, to be metame us, to take away our tahara, and memela, to take away our kedusha, they targeted five things. The first one was bris milah. Bris milah represents, on its first level, tahara, purity of motive. How so? Bris milah is a sacrifice. A person gets nothing out of it except pain, loses some blood. Not only that, it's done ideally on a child whose motives are for sure pure, who has no selfish motives, only 8 days old. So the bris milah is introduced into the person in a level when he's totally pure, when he's a little baby. Even if he's not, and he hasn't had a bris milah when he's a baby, and he has it when he's an adult, but the bris milah in its very nature is sacrifice. It's not doing something for your own selfish motivation. It's pain and loss of blood. So it starts with tahara. And it leads to Kedusha. It represents the essence of our connection to God. Our connection to God is represented by Bris Milah. Bris meaning a covenant, a connection, a kesher. It starts and based on Tahara, and it becomes Kedusha. We have God's name in our very bodies. We're holy people. We're holy people because we're pure people. Because it starts with purity. And then, so they wanted to eradicate Bris Milah. And then we as a people testify to the fact that there's a God in the world, that God exists, that Shabbos. Shabbos is testimony that there's a God who created this world. The world just didn't come by itself. It was created in 6 days by God. So Shabbos is the idea, and Shabbos is also Kodesh. Shabbos Kodesh. It represents the existence of God, not just in the Jew, but the world was created by God. Not only the Jew was created by God. And then there's Rosh Chodesh. That's the next thing they wanted to destroy. Because Rosh Chodesh represents, not only is there a God who created the world, there's a God who is involved on an ongoing basis in the world. And that is the Kedusha of time. Not only is the world holy, time is holy. So the idea of Rosh Chodesh is that God is involved in the world, not just that he created the world. And then they targeted Jewish women. They wanted to defile the sanctity of marriage. Marriage is called Kiddushin, holiness. They wanted to desecrate it, and they made a decree that every woman who would get married, right, would have to first have relations with the Greek officer of the place before she lived with her husband for the first time. That desecrated the holiness of marriage. And then they prohibited taras hamishpacha, they prohibited women going to the mikveh after they were married in order to make marriage tameh, not tahor, not pure. So they wanted to, and what is marriage, what is the Jewish home? That's the continuation of all of this. It doesn't only exist for the here and the now. It's something that exists forever. It has a continuation to it. It's in perpetuity. And therefore, they wanted to destroy that, the Kedusha and Tahara of the future, future generations. And the last thing they targeted was money. Jewish money, Jewish possessions. And the Medrash says that any possession, there's one Medrash that says it was only cattle. They had to write on the horns of the animal. But another Medrash says it's any possession a Jew owned. He owned a tape recorder. He owned a book. He owned a house. He had to engrave on that possession, I have no share in the God of Israel. It has no connection to godliness. And therefore, they wanted to eradicate our bringing Kedusha, our bringing holiness into the mundane world. So that is exactly what Yavan wanted to do against us. And therefore, there was a fight between whose malchus, whose kind of kingdom. Is the kingdom going to be of the tzaddikim, of the people whose God rests on them, or the people who rest on their God? What kind of kingdom is going to be in this world? And that's what it says. Ravta esrivam. You fought their battles. Because there was a battle going on between malchios, between empires. Which empire is going to be the one that runs this world? Our empire or their empire? And secondly, danto esdinon. There was a din. Right? What in those empires, it wasn't just a question who's going to have control. What kind of control is it going to be? Is it going to be one of tzaddikim or one of rishoyim? One of tameim or one of tahorim? What is the kind of malchus? Not just who's going to have the malchus. What kind of malchus? That's danto es dinam. And lastly, nokanto es nikmasam. If our malchus is the one that has to be and bring Kedusha into the world, then if they thwart that Malchus, and they prevent that Kedusha, then there has to be revenge taken. Because revenge means when evil has success, and they stop good from coming into the world, something has to happen to compensate for the bad that was successful, and for the good that was prevented from coming into the world. And all of that, the fight was basically between who is going to persevere, the few and the weak. We're not looking to aggrandize ourselves. We're not looking for our own power, for our own numbers. Atem hama'at mikol ha'amim. You are the smallest amongst the nations, meaning you make yourselves small. So we were ma'atim. We were people who made ourselves small, and we were chaloshim. We were weak. We weren't looking to thrust ourselves on the world scene, but to thrust the Rabbono Shel Olam. So rabim biad mi'atim, and giborim biad chaloshim, that corresponds to Rav to Esrivam. But then there was another thing, not just whose malchus is going to overcome the other one, but what kind of malchus is going to be. It wasn't just us or them, it was what kind of malchus. So the danto es dinam, you judged which kind of malchus is going to run this world, and that corresponds to tmeim biyat tahorim, rishoyim biyat tzadikim. And finally, when they thwarted our malchus from bringing God's presence into the world and making things holy, so there had to be some kind of compensation. That's nakamta es nikmasam. There had to be some kind of revenge to compensate for the damage that they did and to right the wrongs that they did and to replenish the kedusha that they prevented from coming into the world. That zeidim biad oske sorasecha. People who learn Torah now were the ones who had the upper hand, and they brought more kedusha into the world. So that's what this struggle was all about. And the menorah represents all of these concepts. That's why the miracle happened through the menorah. And the menorah, it says, was just a sign that the miracle of our winning the war wasn't just a military victory and just decided who's going to be in charge, but how are you going to be in charge? What's the purpose of this world? Our malchus and their malchus were diametrically opposed in their purpose, and therefore it wasn't just a matter of we won or they won. It's what kind of malchus God won. Gadol is God's giving. Giving is pure, altruistic, not selfish. God is pure. He gives. He doesn't take. He has no personal interest. It's all to give. It's all for our sake. And therefore, kadosh, shame kadosh, that leads to holiness. Yes, we had a tremendous salvation, and we came out on top. But purkan means to separate us from the rest of the nations, to make it clear that what our purpose is, that's the leading purpose in the world. And the menorah represents these things. How so? First of all, the menorah represented the fact that God's Shekhinah rested amongst the Jewish people. That's like Bris Milah. Just like Bris Milah shows that God's presence rests mamish amongst each and every Jew. So the menorah, the fact that it burned for 40 years in the desert, the Ner Maravi, it never went out. So it showed that God's presence rested amongst the Jewish people. So that's the first lesson. It also illuminated and lit up the world and let them know that there's a God, not just us. And it was something that went on in time. It showed that time is ruled by God. It's not just a one-time thing. And it's something that had perpetuity. It had a continuation. That's the next thing. And it lit up the shulchan. The menorah was opposite the shulchan. The shulchan represented all the physical, material things of this world. Parnasa. And the menorah illuminated the shulchan and took all of that and put it in a different light, put it in the light of holiness. Those are the five things that the Yevonim wanted to take away. Mila, which represents God's presence amongst the Jewish people. Shabbos, which represents God in the world, the Creator. Rosh Chodesh, that represents God as the one who has divine providence, didn't just create, but is involved with the world. Women is the continuation of all of this. It's not something that will end. It's eternal. And mammon, money, that it has to go and affect every material, mundane thing in this world. The menorah, like we explained, has all of those ideas in it. I want to explain with this a medrash. The medrash says, "Hadudoyim nosnu reyach ze ruvein shehitzlis Yosef, ve'al psochenu kol megodim ze nirchanaka." It's a pasuk in Shir Hashirim. The Dudoyim were mandrakes. They gave off an aroma. And on our doorstep are all the dainty things. That's the sentence. So the Medrash explains the sentence to apply to the following. Hadudoyim nosnu reach refers to Reuven. Because Reuven is the one who brought the Dudoyim, the mandrakes, to his mother, Leah. And that refers to Reuven who saved Yosef. V'al psochenu kol megodim, that refers to Ner Chanukah, which is on the door, outside the door. So there's two questions here. One is, I would understand why the Dudoyim refer to Reuven, but it refers to Reuven who brought the Dudoyim to his mother, not the Reuven who saved Yosef. That's a different episode. That had nothing to do with the Dudoyim. Why does HaDudoyim Nosnu Reach apply to Reuven who saved Yosef and not the Reuven who brought the Dudoyim to his mother? Where do we get Yosef and that episode in this pasuk? All it says is Dudoyim. And secondly, what does all of that have to do with Ner Chanukah? Obviously, there are two different periods of history and nothing to do with each other, seemingly. So it could be the idea is the following. When Reuven brought the Dudoyim to his mother, he did an act of selflessness. Let me explain to you why. The Rishonim say that these Dudoyim were a fertility drug. They had the power to help a woman get pregnant who was having a hard time getting pregnant. Reuven, his mother didn't say, could you go out and look for some Dudoyim, go to the pharmacy and get me some Dudoyim. I've had five children, I'm not having any more children for a while, I'd like more children. He didn't tell him to do it. He did it on his own. Why? If anything, Reuven should not have brought these Dudoyim to his mother. Why not? Because we know from Noach already that children don't like more children in the family. For a very simple reason. Because when it comes to the Yerusha, they have to split it an extra way. And they're not interested in doing that. Right? By Noach, it says that he had three children. And Cham, according to some, or Canaan, Cham's son, right, mutilated Noach, so he shouldn't be able to have any more children. It's according to one opinion, that's what happened there. And why? Because Cham said, or Canaan said, it's enough to split the Yerusha three ways. We don't need another bunch of children to split this Yerusha up. So it's in the best interest of a child not to have more children in the family to split the Yerusha. They get more that way. Which child loses the more if there's other children? The Bechor. The firstborn gets double portion. He loses a double portion for every new child there is. So if anything, Reuven should have said, you know what? God doesn't want my mother to have any more children. Baruch Hashem. Right? It's nice the way it is. Five is great. That will be the Yerusha. We don't need more. And yet, Reuven did an act of selflessness. And he knew his mother wanted very much to have more children, and he brought her the Dudoyim. Uncommanded, no one would have ever known if he just tiptoed past the Dudoyim and never brought them home. but he brought them home. That was selfless. That's tahara. Like we said, tahara is purity of motivation. That same Reuven, hadudoyim nosnu reyach, that maisa of dudoyim gave out an aroma. It had an effect in the future. That same Reuven was beset with a tremendous nisoyon. His brothers want to kill Yosef because they think that he's trying to take over and encroach on everything that's rightfully theirs. He wants to be the king, and he wants to be everything, and he wants to get them out of the picture. At that moment, at that time, Reuven was still the Bechor, and he was supposed to be the Kohen, he was supposed to be the Melech. He was everything. And if Yosef wanted to take away, he was taking it away from him. So Reuven could have just walked away quietly and let the other brothers do the dirty work. He didn't have to say anything. He didn't have to get involved. They would have done what they wanted to do if he didn't speak up. And he wouldn't have had to be involved aggressively at all. He could just keep quiet, and all his dirty work would have been done by the other brothers, and he would have benefited. But the same Reuven who selflessly brought the Dudoyim to his mother, and in the end, it didn't cause his mother to have another child, because she gave those Dudoyim to Rachel. And because of that, Yosef came on the scene. So Reuven learned from that, if you do something selfless, something good comes from it. May not be, and his mother also had another child. They both had children. So you see that selfless, pure motivation accomplishes something. And therefore, when he was beset with this test, I can just keep my mouth shut, walk away, and the dirty work will be done by the other brothers. Reuven was the last one who should have spoken up for Yosef, because he had the most to lose. He's the one who spoke up, because he learned from the Dudoyim that if you do something selfless, good things come from it. And therefore, he selflessly saved Yosef to his detriment. And even though he didn't save him, he got Yosef sold in Mitzrayim, and eventually they benefited from it, because that's where their food supply came during the famine. So that's, what does that have to do with Ner Chanukah? That's what Ner Chanukah is. Ner Chanukah, the Chashmonoim didn't have to sacrifice, didn't have to go and fight, nobody else was. They were anusim, it was all against their will, but they selflessly went and volunteered to fight the Greeks, and Memela from that came Ner Chanukah. When you do Tahara, you get Kedusha. When you do something with purity, then you get Kedusha comes from that. The another thing they speak about by Chanukah that we can explain with this is the following. The Gemara says, Ner Chanukah shinichu lamala mi'esrim amah psula. If you put the Ner Chanukah higher than 20 amas, 30 to 40 feet above ground level, you're not yotzei the mitzvah. It has to be within person's line of vision. That's too high. And right after that it says, Habor reik ein bo mayim, last week, Sedra, that the pit that they threw Yosef into was empty, there was no water. And the Gemara says, if it was empty, of course there was no water. Why did the Torah have to say there was no water? It said it was empty. Mayim ein bo avon nechoshim v'yakrovim yesh bo. There was no water, it was empty of water. But there were snakes and scorpions in the pit. So what's the connection between these two things? Ner Chanukah 20 amas high, and the fact that the boar that they threw Yosef in had snakes and scorpions. It was empty of water, but full of snakes and scorpions. I think maybe an idea can be the following. What do we see from the fact that if there's no water, water is a symbol of purity. Water is mikveh water. Water is tahara. Water is the symbol of purity. If you take away the purity, right, if there's no purity, then there's going to be nechoshim and akrovim. There's going to be a lot of tuma, and there's going to be a lot of damage. That's what's going to fill the vacuum. That was the lesson to Yosef and his brothers, which they taka didn't see and didn't learn. But it was a lesson that should have been learned. And that is The brothers were jealous. They functioned not pure selflessly, but on some level, according to their great level, they functioned a little bit with a trace of jealousy. Once there's something that's not pure, if there's not water, then there's going to be nechoshim and akravim, and there's going to be damage. Look what happened to Yosef. And there's going to be, what's it called, tumah. And Yosef was also given that lesson. Because Yosef also went and spoke dibosom ra. Wasn't 100% pure. And the Mele, he ended up with the nechoshim and akravim. Same thing with Ner Chanukah. Ner Chanukah is not just a miracle to see. It's something that has to fill up the area around you and light up the darkness. Because if the darkness stays down here and up there you can see the candle, there's going to be nechoshim and akravim to fill the darkness. If you don't do something to light up the area around you, it's going to fill with darkness. And that was Yavan. If you don't do something to push away the Yavanim, the darkness of the Yavanim, then it's going to end up nechoshim and akravim. It's either or. So the Maccabim didn't just put the menorah up somewhere high. They illuminated the darkness that enveloped them, turned that into light, and that's what the miracle of Chanukah was. And that's why, in general, it says that the Yavanim wanted lahashkicham torasecha, to make us forget the Torah, because Torah brings tahara. Torah brings purity. How so? Barasi Yetzer Hara, I created the Yetzer Hara, which is the total selfish behavior in this world, and Barasi Torah Tavlin. The Torah nullifies takes away the effect of the Yetzer Hara. So Torah is tahara, and memeila lahavira michukei ritzonecha. And once you have the tahara, you have the kedusha of the kiddush tana b'mitzvosecha. You have the kedusha of mitzvahs. So they wanted to make us forget the Torah and make us be matame ourselves, do things because of yetzer hara, and also what's it called lahavira michukei ritzonecha, to take away our kedusha. And that's why the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah is Kodesh. That's what we gained by Chanukah. We can be Kedoshim again. Haneros halalu Kedoshim hein. They're Kodesh. We don't use them for personal benefit. You can't use them for anything. Just Lirosam. And the mitzvah happened through the Kohanim, who are the Tahorim, who are the people with pure motivation. So the miracle represents what its lesson is. And that's why it's the Kohanim who affected this salvation. Because we're a Mamleches Kohanim. We are true. We are a empire. We are a kingdom. And we have a king. But our kingdom is for the sake of the Kohanim, the sake of being a Mamleches Kohanim. Except you need an infrastructure. You need to be able to have the power. But in the end, we don't exercise that power for our own sake. We exercise it totally to create an empire of Kohanim. And therefore, it's the Kohanim who won over the empire of Greece. And it could be for that reason the Chashmonaim made a mistake. And they took over the Malchus. They took over the kingdom. They became the kings. Because they thought that exactly was what Chanukah taught them. That the Mamleches has to be a Mamleches Kohanim. And at least for temporarily, the Kohanim have to be the kings to show this. There was a mistake. Because really there has to be a regular king, but the purpose of that kingdom is to be a Mamleches Kohanim. But not that the Kohanim have to be the physical kings also. And the Rabbeinu Bachya says, that the oil of Chanukah is a hint to the oil of Mashiach. The oil that you'll anoint, Mashiach means to anoint. You anoint him with oil. The oil of the anointing oil of Mashiach is hinted to by Chanukah, because that's when the whole world will become, not Jewish, but become governed by the Torah, and liable to the mitzvahs that God gave them in the Torah, the seven mitzvahs, right? And that is the oil, the Kilos Yaakov says, that is the oil that they used to anoint kings, because that is exactly what Hanukkah is. It's our kingdom or their kingdom. Not only who's in charge, what's the kind of kingdom that it is. And that is the idea, Kayom Hazeh. The Nes of Hanukkah happened 200 years before the destruction of the Second Temple as a preface to Golus. In Golus, we lose our Malchus. We lose our Beis HaMikdash. What's left? We can still be a Mamleches Kohanim, the Goy Kadosh in Golus, if we understand what our purpose is. If we remain Tahar and we remain Kodesh. We can even, without a Beis HaMikdash and without a Malchus, but we can be a Mamleches Kohanim, the Goy Kadosh. So Hanukkah set the pattern, or created the beginning, the entrance into Golus properly. And that's why Ner Hanukkah, unlike Mezuzah you put on the right side of the door going in. And the Ner Hanukkah is on the right side of the door going out. Because Hanukkah represented going out into the darkness, going out into the Golus. But if you have that menorah with you to light up the darkness and take away the Nechashim and Akravim, then you'll be able to maintain and continue being a Mamleches Kohanim, the Goy Kadosh, even when you don't have a Beis HaMikdash where the Kohanim serve, and you don't have a Malchus where there's actual kings. But you can take your Malchus, your real Malchus, Mamleches Kohanim, the Goy Kadosh, and illuminate the darkness when you go out of your house into the darkness of Golus. And that's why it says that the mitzvah of Ner Hanukkah is mitzvah chaviva ma'od, the Rambam says. It's a very precious mitzvah. What's precious? It says in Pirkei Avos, chavivim Yisrael, the Jewish people are precious. Why are we precious? For two reasons. One is because we are called bonim Lashem, we're God's children. Meaning that whatever we do with pure, selfless motivation for the sake of our Father. That's the first idea. And secondly, Chavivim Yisrael, we're precious because we have a Torah with which God created the world, and we bring holiness into the world. So we are precious, and the miracle of Hanukkah showed that we're precious. Not just that we won because we were few and weak, and we won over them and our Malchus, but it's a kind of Malchus. Why we won? Because we were Tahorim. Because we were Tzaddikim. Because we were Oskei Torah. Because of the kind of Malchus, like we said. So it wasn't just the fight. It was the din and the nekama that was important too. And therefore, the mitzvah itself, the Sfarim say, the Seder Hayom says, that we won a battle. We got the upper hand. You could think that it was just a physical thing. The miracle of the oil showed retroactively that the victory of the battle was because God loved us and he considered us precious and he wanted our kind of Malchus to be the Malchus in the world, not Malchus Yavan. So it comes out that the mitzvah chaviva, it's a mitzvah that's precious because it represents the preciousness of the Jewish people. And that's why when it comes to the mitzvah of Ner Hanukkah, we have this idea of hiddur mitzvah. Because where do we learn hiddur mitzvah? To do a mitzvah in a beautiful way, in a more enhanced way, all of that is subjective. It's very close to the person himself. Now, it's very dangerous to do a mitzvah in a subjective way because then you're doing it selfishly. But if you're on the level where you function selflessly, everything is for the honor of God. If it's Zekeli, it's my God, and I'm totally subjugated to God, totally negated to Him, then Vanveyu, then I can do it in a way that's beautiful, enhanced, subjective, and it's not going to be selfish anymore, it's going to be also selfless. So that's the idea of Hiddur Mitzvah when it comes to Ner Hanukkah, and that's the idea of Hallel and Hodah. Hodah is an admission. Hodah means you bow yourself, you totally subjugate yourself to God when you thank Him. That's why in Hodah we bow. We bow our whole body. Right? I totally subjugate myself to God. I owe Him everything. That's Tahara. And Hallel is Kedusha. Hallel is then praising God and bringing godliness in the world. So the Hallel and Hodah represents the Tahara and Kedusha, which is the essence of the Jewish people, which is Mamleches Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh. I was thinking that that is the Machlokes between Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai. Beis Hillel says you start with one candle and work your way up. And Beis Shammai says you start with eight candles and work your way down. We said that Hanukkah basically revolves around two concepts. Hallel, Tahara, and Kedusha. Tahara is totally subjugating, nullifying yourself, negating yourself to God, selfless. And Kedusha is bringing more and more holiness into the world. Beis Shammai says everything starts with Tahara. You can't bring Kedusha into the world. You can't get to Kedusha unless you have Tahara, unless you're selfless. And selflessness is, what's it called, being mevatel yourself. And therefore, where do we find this idea of bitl? By Pari Hachad. We bring sacrifices for the nations of the world, the 70 nations on Sukkot, and we bring them in descending order. 14, 13, 12, and so on. Why? Because the nations of the world are getting less and less. Doesn't mean that we're looking to curse them, they should get less. Means that they're uniting. There aren't all these separations or whatever. It's all one united thing under God. That's the goal. So the division should be less and less until they're all united together in service of God. So the concept of Pori Achag represents this idea of bittul, of negating yourself, subjugating yourself, uniting under God. Beis Shammai says that's what Hanukkah represents, Be'ikr the Tahara. From that will come the Kedusha. And Beis Hillel says, no, the main thing is the Kedusha. The Tahara is just a step towards Kedusha. So therefore, let's add every day a little bit more Kedusha, a little bit more light, to represent the Kedusha, which inevitably represents the Tahara, because without the Tahara, you can't have the Kedusha. So represent the goal, not the means. And Beis Shammai says, no, let's go through the means, and you'll reach the goal. And lastly, oh, and that's why the first day is also a yontif. The miracle was only 7 days. One day they had. So they say, well, the first day is to celebrate the victory. But then why do we light candles? We should light candles 7 days and celebrate one day, like Purim, the victory. Now the answer is, like we said, the candles came to show what the victory was all about. The candles came to show that victory wasn't just a question of who's in charge, but what kind of in charge is it? What is the Malchus that's supposed to run this world? Not only who is it, what is it? Not only Ravta es Rivam, but Danta es Dinam and Nakamta es Nikmasam. So therefore, the first day we light the candles to show what the victory was all about, and then we continue it on because that was the purpose of the victory. To bring that light into this world, to bring that Kedusha, what the menorah represents. We said menorah represents everything that represents our being a Mamleches Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh, as we explained. The Tzlach says that if you're looking for what you should do besides the mitzvahs of Chanukah and eat latkes and jelly donuts, what is the avoda of Chanukah? Be involved in all those things that cause the Shechina to leave the Jewish people. Because Hanukkah represents the fact that the Shechina resides amongst us. That we have a connection to God, and that's our purpose in this world, to bring God's presence to the world. So all those things that minimize God's presence in the world are the things that a person should be involved in the opposite of them on Hanukkah. And he says one of the things is the, what's it called, shul. Where is the Shechina? In Golus, in the Beis HaKnesses, Mikdash Ma'at. It's in people who speak and talk in shul, So they are causing the Shechina to leave the place where the Shechina is. So he said, on Chanukah is extra special to be careful not to talk in shul. And I was thinking even more than that. Where is the Shechina in Golus? We don't have a Beis HaMikdash. So where is the Shechina? Two places, it says. One place is the shul, Mikdash Ma'at. And the second place is Ish V'Isha Shechina Shriya B'Nehem, in the home. Isn't it interesting then that where do we light the menorah? In two places. In the home and in the shul. Because that is what Chanukah is all about. To represent where the Shechina is, even though we're in Golus. And we don't have that Malchus, and we don't have the Kohanim in the Beis HaMikdash, but we still remain a Mamleches Kohanim, the Goy Kadosh, even in Golus. Where? In our shuls and in our homes. Okay, have a happy Chanukah. What? And today is Rosh Chodesh. And all of the things, let me just, one last thing. All of the things that the Yevanim tried to take away from us, because we fought for them, not only do we get them back, that was the Nekama, we got them back in a much greater enhanced form than what we lost. Why? Because Chanukah has all those things that they wanted to take away from us. Every Chanukah is 8 days, like Bris Milah. Every Chanukah has at least one Shabbos, sometimes two, and it's Shabbos Chanukah, special Shabbos. And every Chanukah has Rosh Chodesh. They try to take away Rosh Chodesh, and it's a special Rosh Chodesh because we say a whole Hallel, not just half Hallel. And every Chanukah, women have a special part in Chanukah. They don't do work during the time that the candles are lit. And every Chanukah also has the custom of Chanukah geld, money. So all the things that the Yevanim wanted to take away were not only put back, but they were put back and became part of a yontif of Chanukah. They're enhanced and strengthened. Okay.